actually from our own research that probably 90% of the agreements that are made hold up. So if an agreement doesn't hold up, we're not in the position to be able to enforce it or to force people to comply with anything. They have not lost any legal edge. They can carry on, hire an attorney, go to legal aid, go to the public defender, go over wherever the next step would be, and seek assistance that way. So.
Okay, and also a question, Peter, can you handle a will?
No, we cannot. We cannot handle any kind of filing of legal actions. We're there strictly to deal with a dispute and with a conflict.
Okay. Richard, can lawyers provide a written estimate for the hours they may need for the completion of a case since some lawyers do charge, or since lawyers do charge by the hour at a high rate?
Well, I think that it's something that has to be decided between the client and the lawyer, but certainly I think that's a legitimate expectation to have some idea generally as to how much time it's going to take. And I think that's one of the real problems that I see frequently. And for example, a divorce case, uncontested divorce for whatever it is, $100 plus filing fees, can very easily turn into a contested divorce case. And yet the client feels that the lawyer said it was going to be $100, and why is he charging me for a lot more? And also in terms of more complicated cases. So certainly I think that a written estimate is well within reason when you talk it over with the lawyer.
Well, I think sometimes if the case involves litigation or going to court, like a divorce case or even a criminal case, a lot of times, things happen that are unforeseen. You get a case scheduled at 8:30 and you don't get to see the judge till 11:30. Now there's 3 hours that you've been sitting there and waiting, mm-hmm. and it's nobody's fault. It's not the client's fault. It's not the attorney's fault either. Somebody's got to pay for that.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, as far as can be foreseen, certainly, and that's really what a lot of these disputes are about. Was something reasonable, a reasonable expense, that because nobody had foreseen it, and the client will say, well, he said X number of dollars for X number of hours, and yet we're being billed for more than that.
That may be one of the reasons why attorneys are really reticent about putting it down, because then the clients believe it's written in cement. And at that point, they can't guarantee that the husband or wife are not going to start screaming at them and start changing attorneys and start fighting over custody, fighting over the refrigerator, fighting over the iron, the stove, everything. And at that point, the fees just mount up. And before she'd come and said, we've decided everything. It hasn't been decided at all. And I can see where if I was an attorney in private practice and I was sending it out, I would say in a general area of certain amount, and I put a lot of language that would say if certain things arose, though, there may be extra charges.
That's why we don't get involved in fee disputes and leave it to the Hawaii State Bar Association, which does perform that service, mediating fee disputes. And I think a lot of it is simply making sure that the client and the attorney understand what the concerns of each other are.
We've had several calls about fee disputes, so they would need to call the Hawaii State Bar Association.
537-1868, I think. I know that by heart.
Okay. Comment. A lawyer that defends a criminal is just helping the criminal get away with the crime.
That's a misunderstanding that is not uncommon, I think, but they should realize that, all of these technicalities that you read about where because of a statement being suppressed or a piece of evidence being suppressed as a result of illegal actions on the part of the government or the police, the individual gets off. What people should realize is because of this situation, what we're actually doing is we're protecting everybody's rights. We're making sure that the police cannot just walk into your house because some neighbor down the street who doesn't like you called in to the police, made an anonymous phone call and said, I suspect that this person is using drugs and he's got a whole bunch of marijuana plants going behind of his house and this and that. And the police cannot just walk in there because they received their tip. If they do and they arrest the guy, then it probably will be declared an illegal search and the case will be thrown out. So in essence, what we're doing, we're protecting everyone. It's not just the the person who's charged. And if to avoid that, all they got to do is shape up the police and beef up their prosecutor staff and to advise the police as to what actions they can or cannot take.
Okay, we want to have to repeat how many people on the panel have passed the bar exam. Eileen and Eric and Richard, and Peter is not because he is not, does not perform a legal function. He is with the Neighborhood Justice Mediation Center. Are lawyers required to take ongoing schooling to assure that they keep current on the laws?
Not in Hawaii.
Not here?
Not here.
Are they in other states?
In some other states, yes. Mm-hmm. I might add, though, most lawyers do
take advantage of it.
Because we have a continuing legal education which is affiliated with the university that puts on seminars in all fields.
Regularly.
Right.
And they're pretty good. They're varied courses. Mm-hmm. So you have an opportunity to go.
And they're very well attended. I've been to
yes.
a number of them. And obviously people who are in, emphasize a certain area of the law want to make sure that they're current. So I think that it's the rule rather than the exception for people to keep up with what's going on.
Why is there a need for an attorney during an uncontested divorce? Richard, you touched on that earlier.
Well, basically, I think it's in terms of filing papers, making an appearance before the court, that type of thing.
Things that only an attorney can handle.
You don't really need an attorney, but it makes it a lot easier for the judge to handle the case. It'll go smoothly if you do have an attorney. Because if you don't have an attorney, you may not be doing what is required, and the judge, he's not there to help you, you see. And so a person would be better off by getting an attorney so things go, the right papers get filed and the right questions get asked in order to qualify for the divorce decree.
You can do your divorce pro se. It's difficult, and Eric is correct in saying that the judge is not there to help. Basically, the judge is there to make sure that both parties are treated fairly. And if you're having an uncontested divorce and only one person is doing it, then you want to make sure that the other party is being treated fairly. And sometimes they don't know what's going on. I mean, they're in the heat of emotions, but they've said, yes, I want a divorce. Here it is. Get me out of it. Goodbye. And sometimes a judge will not let a divorce go by just because it's obvious that the parties have not thought about it and they're going to have to live with a really unreasonable decision. It's very rare, but you can do it without an attorney.
Well, I was going to say, wouldn't the judges be especially concerned where there are children involved?
Oh,
I mean,
very.
The court is very, very much interested in protecting the welfare of the children in any divorce, and so they'd be especially looking at that to make sure that there's no
everything
harm.
Is taken care of.
Right, or a piece of property, land or apartment. They're very concerned about that.
Yeah, the best way to have uncontested divorce and not have an attorney, so there are no children, no property to speak of, maybe a couple cars and animals, pets and stove, refrigerator, like I said. And everybody agrees, and basically you can carry on. The Legal Aid Society does have a pro se booklet that we have for divorces, and we have all the forms and all the instructions for those people who are income eligible, and we have it available if you're eligible for our services.
Well, I might point out that uncontested divorces place a lawyer in a very difficult situation because the job, filing papers, what have you, the court requires that the lawyer indicate which side he's representing. So if he's representing one side, even if it's uncontested, does he have to help the other side in terms of saying, well, this isn't really, even though you came up with it yourselves, this isn't really to your best interest to do it this way? It may not be fair.
The other side, if you have one side has an attorney and the other side doesn't have an attorney, to have it uncontested, both sides have to agree. So the attorney has to explain to the other side, the opposing party, all the reasons and the things that he's giving up. And at that point, a lot of the divorces become contested.
from an ethical standpoint, that raises a conflict of interest. If you're advising both sides about well, this is how I would handle your case if I were representing you, and this is how I would be handling your case if I was representing you, then and that results in a contested divorce, the lawyer will probably have to withdraw from the case, and they're both going to have to find another lawyer, for one for each side, simply because a lawyer's primary loyalty is to his client, and he can't have a conflict of interest where he's trying to presumably represent both sides in a contested situation.
Peter, this caller understands that the Neighborhood Justice Center now handles child custody cases for the courts. Is that true, and how does it work?
Yeah, we are receiving a number of referrals from the family court in particular, and we're trying to set up mediation procedures. We are doing mediation procedures where the divorcing parents can try to make rational decisions about the custody arrangements and the visitation and so on. And this has been an experiment to some extent for the last 6 months, but it seems to be fairly successful. So we're going to be continuing to do that. And we think it provides a real good opportunity for people to, again, try and settle their own problems, make their own decisions, come to their own agreements.
Okay, and while we're on you, somebody wants to know how they can contact your organization and set up an appointment.
All they have to do is call 521-6767 during working hours.
Okay. Eric, what is the rate of turnover for the public defender's office?
Right now, it's not too bad. When we first got there, Mr. Rubin is the state public defender, and he took over in August of 1980. There was a lot of turnover. You know, he was sending in personnel changes almost constantly. But since we've been there, Mr. Rubin has managed to get a slight increase in pay for the attorneys. I think morale is up. The attorneys get along very well together. And it's probably because of the current job situation for attorneys, it's not that easy for them to get a job. They stay a little bit longer. So they stay, probably 3 years or more. We have attorneys that have been there for more than 3 years. So it's not too bad.
Okay. This person hired a lawyer and has had no progress report for 3 months. Is it professionally ethical to do this when pursuing cases? And is this person responsible to pay for the lapsed time?
Well, I guess, first of all, it's a question of communication. Certainly the client is entitled to know what's going on, if it's something that has to be done. And it may be a situation where, like the lawyer who couldn't took too many clients, couldn't handle any of them all equally well. The lawyer may be doing something, but not very quickly. I would suggest that person call the lawyer to find out what's going on, or write, if he can't get a response for phone call, perhaps write him a letter, maybe even a certified letter, and if he doesn't get a response from that, call me.
Okay. Peter and Aline, what recourse does a tenant have to halt the landlord's raising of rent?
It really depends on whether the landlord has given the tenant correct notice. Actually, the landlord must give the tenant 45 days written notice of the intent to increase rent and the date of the increase. If there is a problem with the premises, in the sense of repair, maintenance, then he may have some recourse. But if the lawyer has given him 45 days notice of the increase in rent, then that's the landlord's within his rights.
There is a landlord-tenant code which governs the relationships between tenants and landlords, and I believe it's available through the Office of Consumer Protection. People can get a hold of a copy of that. And I think what I'm seeing is all the time is people coming in on these kinds of disputes with no understanding whatsoever, and the code's written in lay language. It's not in legalese, and it's readily available.
We also have booklets on landlord-tenant problems that they could, if they call or write us, we can send them a copy of the booklet.
Okay. Peter, what qualifications are required to be a mediator, and are mediators paid?
The mediators are not paid. Most of them are not paid. We have some associates now who are doing, we're starting to work on some fairly complex land use cases. But most of our mediators are volunteers, and they've gone through a professional training that involves at least 40 hours.
In the case of the family mediators, it's 40 hours plus additional training, and they don't receive compensation, but they are trained very thoroughly in the mediation procedures, in understanding the dynamics of conflict, in understanding of how mediation fits and relates to the rest of the legal system and so on. So they're prepared to work on a dispute and help people.
Okay. What are the grounds for disbarment in Hawaii, Richard?
Well, it's something that's uniquely in the province of the state Supreme Court. And in the past, it has been for things like misappropriation of funds, conviction of some type of felony criminal crime, serious violations. And of course, there's a gradation of violations that may result in suspension or some type of public censure or private reprimand. But basically, disbarment is for fairly serious ethical violations.
Okay. Why would anyone be inspired to go to law school when the field is very overcrowded? You think the field is overcrowded, Aline?
I do. I think from 1976 on, it has been very overapplied. I don't know why people would want to go in, to be quite honest, especially in Hawaii.
Maybe he wants to be a judge.
Do you think attorneys are suffering because there's an overabundance of them?
The younger attorneys are probably suffering. I think the well-established attorneys, I don't think they're hurting at all.
Does the panel think that paralegals are useful in advancing clients' cases?
They're excellent. My office has about 12, and they do a lot of the initial paperwork. They do the callbacks to clients for certain, you know, facts that they've forgotten to pick up. They do this, the tracking of the case to keep the client up to date on what's been going on. They save a lot of the attorney time that can be used for other things that only attorneys can do. I think they're excellent. I think that's a new field, or it's a developing field past being.
And I think most attorneys and law firms charge less for paralegals. They make a distinction between what is charged for an attorney and what is charged for a paralegal. So it results in a net benefit for the client. He or she gets more legal services per dollar.
Why does the American Bar Association fail to pass the Integrity Ethics Code year after year?
Well, perhaps what, I'm not sure I understand the question, but what is happening right now is the American Bar Association has a new code of professional responsibility. It's a change in format from the current code of professional responsibility. And there are a number of provisions in that particular model code which are, you know, fairly controversial. So it's not that we don't have a code of professional responsibility. We do have a code of professional responsibility. It's just that the revision is, in some parts, controversial, and that's the reason why probably the American Bar Association is having problems having the House of Delegates pass that code.
Any other thoughts on that?
None for me.
None for me either.
What course of action, you're going to like this one, what course of action can a caller take against National Guard personnel who enter upon property searching for illegal plants?
They ought to call the prosecutors and get them for trespassing.
Really?
Yeah. Because unless they have a warrant, I mean, you know, the government can utilize the National Guard for manpower. But still, if they're going to go on private property, they have to have a warrant. And so if they don't have a warrant, they ought to call the police and see if you can get a trespassing. Or if it's too late, then just file a complaint with the prosecutor's office for trespass.
Okay. Are there lists available of attorneys who specialize in certain cases, and how can these lists be obtained?
What's a lawyer referral?
I think the lawyer referral service is able to, you know, if you're interested in a will, there are certain attorneys who have asked to be referred to the public for wills. In terms of lawyer advertising, I think more and more lawyers are advertising and stating in their ads what areas they emphasize. You know, that's sort of been the general trend. And I think that what you should also do is probably talk to people who have had similar problems or similar cases and get some type of feedback, because, you know, certainly if you have a friend who had a divorce and was satisfied with the lawyer, that probably would be a better recommendation than you know, getting it some other way.
Getting back to what we were just talking about, Eric, marijuana seizures from backyards. Growing marijuana is illegal. How can you try to use laws to protect people that are guilty of it?
Well, can I answer that question? You know, I can't give advice as to how he is. He's just got to use his brain, you know. If it's illegal, then he shouldn't grow it. That's the best way to protect himself.
And if he's a lawyer, certainly.
Right.
He's a lawyer, he really shouldn't grow it.
Because
if he still wants to grow it, then he should have somebody else, hire somebody to go tend the plants.
We've had a couple of questions, Eric. Why is Henry Hui Hui having a difficult time in obtaining an attorney? Why can't the public defender's office handle this case?
Okay. With Henry, our office, number one, feels that we have a conflict because we're a statewide office and we have an office in Hilo. And sometime in the past, our office represented this person, Randy Kauku, who's the principal witness against Henry Hui Hui. And so because of that, we said we had a conflict. Also, I think when he first got into this trouble, he must have made an application, and we determined that he didn't qualify for public defender services because of the income that he made from his employment. So for those two reasons, we are not able to represent him.
What recourse does he have if he can't get a private attorney?
Well, the judge will make certain that he does have assistance of counsel when the case goes to trial. And I might add that we did receive a call from the court in asking about the possibility of sending someone from Honolulu to represent him, but we felt that we couldn't do that either. And the judge is anxious to get this case started, and he is trying very hard to find an attorney who will represent him. I think the judge's problem in appointing a private attorney to represent him at the cost to the state is because of the amount of fees that can be paid, and it's limited. And in this particular case, it's going to be a complicated case, and it's going to last for a few weeks, I think, the trial is. And it involves a tremendous amount of work, and I don't think the private attorneys would accept the appointment if they know that the maximum fee is $3,000, which it would be. And if that's the case, the judge is going to have a difficult time.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but one more question, a clarification again of the difference between the Legal Aid Office and the Public Defender's Office.
Well, the Public Defender's Office represents generally criminal cases, but anyone whose liberty, like I say, is being threatened, who's in danger of being locked up someplace, so that includes mental commitments also. Legal Aid, they handle civil matters.
Civil matters being domestic, landlord-tenant, public entitlements, housing, employment, consumer, anything that's not criminal, if that's ever a definition.
We just have a couple of minutes left. Are there any closing comments, thoughts that you'd like to share on some of the things that have been brought up tonight?
Well, I think clients or people who have attorneys should also think when they're thinking that they're not satisfied because maybe the attorney hasn't called them right away or hasn't responded to their questions in a time which they feel is enough for the attorney to respond, they should remember that, you know, that person is not the only client that that attorney has, and the attorney is fairly busy. So you should be a little bit patient with the attorney. And that goes for even for public services such as what we provide.
My only comment is that before a person goes to an attorney or thinks he needs to go to an attorney, he or she should actually think and decide whether she needs an attorney and whether basically she or he is being vindictive and just wants to get an attorney to get back at the other person. And that basically her problem could be solved by somebody who is very objective. And at that point, I think they really should go to the Neighborhood Justice Center. There is so many people out there who really run to an attorney whenever they get mad at somebody or they get annoyed, and they should basically see not an attorney, but a mediator. It would save them a lot of time and a lot of money.
I'd have to agree. I mean, I really think that we're living in a society in which there's way too much litigation. And part of it is we've professionalized so many pieces of our lives, and we need to begin to think of ways that people can be empowered to handle their own problems. I think it's not to say that there isn't a role, because I think litigation and the work of attorneys is there, and it shouldn't be the first step. It should be the second or third step.
Okay, we are out of time, so I'm going to have to wrap up the discussion. But we want to thank our panelists for coming out tonight. Aline Richardson with the Legal Aid Society, Eric Moon with the Public Defender's Office.